Hi, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk. I'm Ryan Dobson, and today we're going to continue our question and answer session with Dr. Meg Meeker. As many of you know, Dr. Meg Meeker is our co-host for Family Talk and is the best-selling author of several books, including Strong Fathers, Strong Daughters, and Strong Mothers, Strong Sons. She's been in private practice as a pediatrician for over 25 years, and her blog on the Family Talk website is one of the most visited pages on our site because she gives parents the opportunity to ask questions about how to raise their children. And today we're going to hear the conclusion of this program. So here now is Dr. Meg Meeker as she takes questions from parents on effectively raising kids on today's edition of Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk.
Cindy, I think you're up next.
How do you let go of your son, your baby, your last one, going off to college?
Oh, Cindy, I feel your pain because I walked through it about 4 years ago with my very own son. My husband and I have three grown daughters and our son, who is our baby. I have some thoughts for you. First of all, the normal transition into the empty nest syndrome is a painful one for many, many mothers because we pour a lot into our children. The core of our identity for many years is the fact that we are the mother to these children. We love them, we work for them, and there's a fear that begins to surface in us that as these children go away and we're left with a home that is empty without children and all these bedrooms with all of our kids' wonderful memorabilia in it that reminds us of all the fun that we had with them, there's a fear that we will be lost for the next 20 or 30 or 40 years, and we really don't know who we are, where we're going, and what we're going to do. And I want to encourage you in something. You will get past that. Your identity is much greater than your identity as your mom. God created you as a woman with many wonderful things to give to other people, not just your children. You can be a great mom as your children move into adulthood, but you can also begin to utilize some gifts that perhaps you've never used before. There's another point that I want to address here also, and this can be a little bit hard to hear, and that is many mothers have difficulty letting go of their children because their identity has somehow become fused with your children. In other words, they live with a sense of needing to be needed by their children. The truth is, and the reality is, biblically, we don't need our children. We want them, we love them, we desire them, but we can be whole people, happy people, without our children. That's hard for a mother to hear who doesn't really understand where she ends and her child begins. And I don't know if this is part of the dynamic that is present in your relationship with your son. If that's true, you might need a little bit of help navigating the transition with your son going off to college. You will know that you are a bit too fused, if you will, with your son if you find yourself constantly looking back at the good old days, when you used to this and when you used to that, and you long for that to be back, and you have real resentment at him being gone. So it's really kind of a balance. All of us mothers look back on the good old days. But I want to tell you something, Cindy, and I want you to hear me. Your best days with your son are ahead. Your best days with your son are ahead because you raised a man who is strong enough to go off to college, stand on his own 2 feet, and he's getting ready to fly. And that is something to rejoice in. And you never want to communicate to your son that you want him back, that you need him back. I want to encourage you, let yourself grieve this transition for a time. And then you need to be ready to embrace the future and to know that your future for you is terrific. Because even though we tell this to high school and college kids, I'm going to tell it to you now, right now. God tells us that he knows the plans He has for our future, and that the future is good. He doesn't have plans to harm you or to do you ill, but God has wonderful, wonderful plans. You can have so much fun in these years ahead, and the more fun you have, the more fun your son is going to have. So blessings to you. I know you can get through this time. We have Lisa from my old stomping ground, Wisconsin.
Hello. My son is 20 years old, and he still lives at home. He's going to college, he's making good grades, but he doesn't think that he needs to get a paying job. How much space should I give him, and should he be working? Thank you so much.
Lisa, you sound like a lovely, kind, giving, compassionate mother who is a little bit easygoing. Let me tell you something about what a 20-year-old man needs. Now, this is separate from whether he's living at home or whether he's not living at home. Every young man needs a sense that he can accomplish something, that he's good at something. And men garner a lot of their identity from the work that they do. And women are a little bit different. We wear a lot of different hats, and we don't derive a lot of our identity as women from our work, but a lot of men do. So here's what's going on with your son. You say your son is studying hard. I assume he's getting good grades and he's a good student. Terrific. That is making him feel good as a man. However, if when he's not studying, he's sitting in your home, he's watching television, he's eating food that you've prepared, driving your car, he is not feeling good about who he is as a man. Your job as a mom is to launch this kid, to not treat him like he's a bad kid, because he's still a kid. Cognitively and intellectually, he's not fully developed. He's only 20. So he's got a couple more years of brain matter that still needs to grow and to develop in a more sophisticated manner. I think that your son should have a job. I don't know if he needs a job 20 hours a week, 5 hours a week, or 40 hours a week. The number of hours he works per week really depend on the workload that he's doing. First of all, we talked about the fact that he feels good about his identity as a man if he has work to do. He feels better about himself if he has a paycheck coming in. These are things that build his self-esteem and put him on the right path. Third, he needs to understand that he is a contributing member to your family. He isn't a leech. He wants to give back to you. He wants to participate in helping your home run and helping your home function. But those things don't come naturally. If he isn't able to discipline himself to do that, then you need to train that discipline into him. And many young men need to have a work ethic and hard work trained into them. They don't just wake up one morning and go, well, that was a lot of fun. I think I'm going to go get a job and work 40, 60 hours a week and turn coursey. It doesn't happen that way. They need to be pushed. If I were in your position, this is what I would do. One evening when everybody's at home or just you and he are at home and you're in a good mood, I would sit down and I would talk to him and I would say, son, here's the deal. I am really proud of the work that you're doing at school, and I'm thrilled that you're at the college and that you're working as hard as you're doing. But I need your help around the house. I need you to help me pay with the rent. You know, you otherwise would be paying college tuition towards your dorm or your food, and you're not. So I need some help with the rent. And I would like you to pay X amount per month towards groceries. I love to cook for you, but you eat a lot. So I need grocery money and I need rent money. And this is how much I need. $300, $400, you decide. And then you have two choices. You can either let him go and say, okay, well, I got to come up with a job on how to pay this. Or you could say, I have some ideas about where you could work. Would you like to hear my ideas? Many, many, many students who are full-time college students living on campus have part-time jobs on the college campus. And many college campuses have jobs specifically geared toward students. But definitely, you need to toughen up here. You sound like a mom who's a little too nice for her son's own good. You need to toughen up. You don't be mean. You're not cruel. But you say the time has come. You need a job. That's just the way it is. Don't get mad. Don't fight about it. But lay down the law. And I think you're going to find your relationship with your son is going to get a whole lot better. Peggy from Dallas. Hello. Thank you for calling.
Hi, Dr. Meeker. My 2-year-old grandson is still not on a sleep schedule, and my poor daughter is exhausted. Can you give us some advice, please?
Absolutely. I have something that I talk to my patients about, Peggy, called sleep training. Here's what your daughter and you need to understand about children and their sleep, and anybody listening out there who has a child who's under 3. Until children are closer to 2.5 or 3 years old, they don't sleep through the night. What you need to train them to do is to not wake you up when they wake up. So understanding that, you can know, now wait a minute, you change your focus a little bit in training your child. You know, many of us here have these children who come home from the hospital, they fall asleep at 10 o'clock at night, and they don't wake up until 6 in the morning. Those are very, very unusual children. But the overwhelming majority of children, until they're 2.5 or 3, wake up in the night. They look around, they may turn over, they may suck their thumb, they may bat at the mobile above their head or play with some toys in their crib, but they're comfortable and they go back to sleep. If her 2-year-old is not staying in his room quietly all night long, here are a couple of concerns that I have, and I would like you to tell your daughter these. First, her son needs to know that he's safe in his room or in his crib without mom and dad there. When he awakens and his mom rushes in to console him, the message she gives him is, you need me here. You're really not okay. Your crib and your bed and your room are a very scary place. I understand that, so I'll be here. She doesn't want to communicate that to him. If she stays out of the room and even calls into him where she can't see him, you're okay, in a soothing voice, that will reassure him that he is safe in that room. That's a really important lesson for kids to know. Secondly, a 2-year-old and even children as young as 6 months and 4 months need to learn to self-soothe. They need to learn that when they have to go back to sleep, that they don't need someone else to soothe them to sleep. They can do it on their own. And here are a couple of the tricks that I use. I think it's very important for kids to have a well-established soothing routine. By that, I mean when you go to put your 2-year-old to bed, you have one routine that lasts maybe 2 or 3 minutes that you do every single night, and it never changes. You go into the room, you sit with them on the chair, you read them a book or you rock with them, and then the minute you put them into bed, you wind up a toy or you play a tape. So there's some soothing music. You look at the child, you walk out of the room. Many kids, if they go through a routine like that, will begin to hear that music, and the music automatically starts to put their mind to sleep. My own granddaughter, for instance, is one. My daughter plays rain in her room, the sound of rain, and she can actually unplug the rain machine, and my granddaughter will wake up. So music is a wonderful way to soothe kids to sleep. You say, well, my 2-year-old can't turn on his rain machine in the middle of the night. No, but what your daughter can teach him to do is give him a toy in his crib that he can wind up, or a little something where you pull down on a cord and the music begins to play, and that's how he begins to self-soothe. So teaching your children those techniques are important. Here's the tough part, and here's the hard part. When you go into a sleep training schedule or mode with your children, and this is what your daughter needs to do, you pick 5 days and you say, in the next 5 days, I will accomplish nothing but having my son go through the night without screaming for me. And this is going to take a spine of steel and some real resolve on your daughter's part. And you don't start going through sleep training until you're really ready to do it. And this is what she does. She sits down with her husband, says, honey, I'm exhausted. I can't deal with this. She says, okay, we need to go through the sleep training pattern. This is what we're going to do. Either you or I are going to put him to bed every night. And here's the routine that we're going to use. And they come up with a routine. It lasts about 5 minutes. And then they make it a way for their child to self-soothe. They put the musical toy in the child's bed. They put the book in the bed, whatever it is that's part of the routine. And then they go to bed, and at 1 in the morning, that child starts to scream. And he's standing up in his scream, and he's shaking the bars, and his face is red as a tomato, and he's screaming at the top of his lungs, "Mommy, Mommy, Mommy, I need you." But what he's really saying is, "Mom, you better get in here or else." He's having temper tantrums, okay? If he is soothed by your daughter walking in, she can walk to the door and say, "Nope, it's nighttime," and walk away. Most kids who have real strong wills don't do that very well. Mom and dad need to stay in their room, and they need to let that kid have a temper tantrum. If he is a really strong-willed child, he may scream for 2 hours. That's a lot of screaming. And your daughter is going to feel like the worst mother in the entire world. But you need to remind her, "Honey, what you're doing is teaching him A, the temper tantrums don't work even at 1 in the morning, and B, he's safe in his crib." Because I guarantee you, after the second or third night, when he realizes the temper tantrums in the night don't work, that little guy will sit down in his crib and he'll go, "All right, I got to try a new method." He'll figure out how to go back to sleep, and maybe he'll try something during the day. The other thing that's very important, I don't know if your daughter's doing this, I need to say this before we end, is no food in the middle of the night. No milk, no bottles, no juice, no water, nothing. If she's doing that, she's training his stomach to begin to growl at whatever time he's waking up. And I'll tell you, sometimes moms don't have the stomach for this. It takes a dad. And I've had many patients who've husbands who've had to send their wife away for the weekend. They do the sleep training program, come back, and by Tuesday, they've got a new kid on their hands. I'll tell you, her son will be a lot more fun to be with during the day because he's not going to be exhausted either. She can do it. You got to give her the courage to do it. And I'll guarantee you, as I said, I've never seen sleep training fail. Good luck to you. Lisa, I think you're up next.
Hello. I'm from Buffalo, New York. I have a family of 3 children that are all under 9 years old. My husband and I both work full-time, and we are always so stressed out. Overall, what would be one piece of advice you would give to me? Thank you.
Well, Lisa, you're in a really tough position. 3 children under 9 years of age. I guess the encouragement that I would give you are 2 words. Hold on. It's not always going to be so hard. And here's why. The older children get, the easier life gets in many ways. You get rid of the diapers. You get rid of cribs in the room. You get rid of a lot of temper tantrums if you're lucky. Those years when your children are young, even if you have just 1 parent working outside the home and 1 parent home full time, are very, very stressful anyway. When you add to that 2 working parents who are working full time, they not only have the stress of the children, but they have the extra physical and mental exhaustion of the workplace. What I would encourage you to do is really simplify life at home as best you can. You need to come up with a schedule and an order. And often what parents will do if they're working outside the home is they'll feel so guilty that when they are not working, they want to compensate for the time that they weren't home with their children. So they go overboard in the evenings and the weekends by running the kids around and doing a lot of fun and playful things. And I would encourage you not to do that. I would encourage you to keep the time that you are home with your children as simple and quiet as possible, because what the kids really want is not a lot of razzle-dazzle or water parks or McDonald's or adventures. They really just want some time one-on-one with you. So when you're home in the evenings, eat a simple meal. If you need to take shortcuts with your foods. You know, eating fast food periodically is perfectly fine for a time. And then in your evenings, just do simple things with your kids. Play in the backyard, take a bike ride, read books, whatever, and put the kids to bed at a fairly early hour, not just for you and your husband to have some time together, because you need some time together with each other as well, but so that they get adequate sleep and you get adequate sleep. And I will promise you, your stress level will get a lot better. If the kids understand that the two of you are working to make family life better for you, they're going to understand that they are part of that family and they need to participate in the functioning of the family. And they really will do okay. Just let yourself off the hook and keep life as simple as possible. Hi, Susan from Cleveland. How are you?
Hello. I'd like to ask, what is the best way to handle a 12-year-old girl's mood swings and being disrespectful?
Susan, you have a 12-year-old girl with a lot of mood swings and she's disrespectful. I assume she's being very disrespectful to you. Now, I have talked about the way children speak to their parents before, and I feel very, very strongly about this, and that is that we must train our children to speak respectfully to us and to speak respectfully to their siblings. It takes time to get them to speak respectfully to their siblings for several different reasons, because their siblings can't really do anything about it if they're mean to each other. But we, on the other hand, hold all the cards, and we can do a lot to our 12-year-old kids, girls or boys, if they're disrespectful to us. Here's something that you're not going to want to hear me say, but I'm going to say it because it's the truth. The reason your daughter, who's 12, is being disrespectful to you is twofold. First and foremost, you don't respect yourself enough as a mother to demand respect from your daughter. She's the kid. You're the mom. You're given authority in the home. She isn't. You own everything she has. She couldn't go to school, eat meals, be at home, and function in life if she didn't have you in the picture. Secondly, you need to shore up your discipline. If she is being rude to you, what I'm sensing is that she's rude to you over and over, and she's rude because she knows she can be, because she feels she can get away with anything she wants. Biblically, we know that training the way our children speak is extremely important, important enough for James to have written about it in the book of James. Here's what I would do with your daughter if she were mine. And I'll tell you, Susan, I've been in your shoes. Here's what I would like you to do. You sit down at a time which is calm and both of you are relaxed and you're in good mood, and you look at her and say, honey, here's the problem. You are speaking in ways that I can't allow. You talk to me in a way that is rude, and I won't accept it because it's a lie. Whenever you talk to me that way, you are lying to me because that's not who I am, and I'm not going to accept it. I'm also concerned because as your mother, I know that a lot of your happiness in the future rests in your ability to control how you speak. So we're going to go into a training period now. I am not going to allow you to say, and then you figure out what you don't want her to say. Or I'm not going to allow you to use this tone of voice. Or I'm not going to accept when you do this. And you are very specific about it. Don't give her a long list of things, but give her a few things. You can't say, shut up. You can't say, you're stupid. You can't yell at me. And when this happens, the next time I hear this happens, this is what's going to take place. Your iPhone is going to be gone for a week. In other words, just like when she was 2 or 3 or 4, when you have this conversation, you're drawing the line in the sand and you're saying, we're at war and I am the chief and you are the one who needs to come in line. So my job here is to stand strong and be ready to help you help yourself. And the way I help yourself is to implement the consequences that come when you speak this way. I will promise you, if you have a very smart, bullheaded daughter, you are going to have 2 or 3 or 4 days that are horrible. And you may not get to work. You may not get your laundry done. You may not get to go out with friends. You may not get anything done but this. But you will stay in there tougher, and you will understand that one of the two of you is going to go down in this war period. And Susan, Don't you ever let that person be you. You, as her mother, have been given a God-given authority in her life. And if she doesn't learn to speak respectfully to you now or respect you now for who you are, in 4 years, you're going to have a 16-year-old kid standing in your kitchen with a set of car keys in her hands who's going to look at you and say, "Forget you, Mom. I don't like the way you're doing this. I'm taking off for the weekend with my friends anyway." And she storms out the house. That's a dangerous, dangerous place to be. Nip it in the bud. Stop it right now, Susan. You can do this. I know you can, because I know you can be tougher than that little girl. Blessings to you.
You've been listening to the conclusion of a question and answer session with Dr. Meg Meeker here on Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk. I'm Ryan Dobson, and if you'd like more information about parenting or to visit Dr. Meeker's blog, come to our website, drjamesdobson.org, or call us at 877-732-6825. This is Ryan Dobson saying God bless, thanks for joining us, and we'll see you next time for another edition of Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk.
Family Talk is not affiliated with Focus on the Family.